SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three. We were a little late getting to Tony, or Tony was a little late getting to us, and so it pushed us all the way here to the top of the hour, and managed to be right on time for hour three. Steve Haskin joining us for a visit, and Steve visited Saratoga again to close out the season, and it included opportunities to watch these two-year-olds, and of course, going on at Del Mar as well, debutante and futurity out there, Spinaway and Hopeful, historic races on this coast, Saratoga, plus the Woodward Day and more. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I miss it already.
Once the weather clicked into place, it certainly, you know, and even during the rough patch, let's call it, it was still a terrific summer, and everybody I've talked to, on air and off, you know, we all you know, continue to appreciate. You know, I had Andy on yesterday. We usually take the summers off with him, and you know, kind of rehash the summer. He always hates to leave, and of course, grew up for the most part in Saratoga. It's special for everybody.
Well, you know, especially where we stay, just getting up in the morning. I miss the sound of the hoofs pounding on the turf, as they say, or the loam. You know, at 5:30 in the morning, and you know, the horses are already out training, and you could hear the sound of the hoofs, and just getting dressed and going out there. And you know, it's great when it's cold and invigorating, and you got that chill in the air, and you got to wear a jacket, which we didn't get too many of those.
No,
but it was. I mean, it's just great going out there. And like I said, the distance between the Friedberg's house and the Shug McGahee's barn is like, you know, it's like walking across the street from your house. I mean, it's just literally a stone's throw away. And you got Shug's barn and Clement and then Bill Mott. And, you know, Bill Mott's had such an interesting meet. It was always great seeing him. And sometimes I'll go out in the morning and Bill will be standing right outside the front gate watching the horses train and, you know, waiting for Hofburg or a Late or Yoshida or, you know, any of the big horses he has. And it's just great talking to him and catching up with Lucas, who's always out there on the pony. And, you know, same guys walk by each morning, and just, you know, whether you're sitting out there having coffee or just, you know, walking around and making the rounds, it's just great. That's what I miss the most. I miss the mornings, just being on the backstretch, literally on the backstretch. Just watching the horses run, and the guy who handle, I don't know what that title is, but he sort of monitors the horses that go in and out of the track and anything that goes on, and he keeps in touch with the stewards. This guy Tim, it's always good talking to him. He's always got stories to tell, and the outriders hang out right outside, you know, the back gate. And you know, it was great too, because so, you know, I was able to put my grandson, you know, at 6 months, you know, up on his first horse. The outrider picked him up, put him on the horse, so he's already sat on his first horse. So that's what made it a special meet as well. Just, you know, having my daughter and son-in-law and my grandson up there for the early part, and you know, Saratoga Shakespeare in the park and all of that. You know, in some ways, it seems like it was a long time ago, early in the meet, because you know, we were up there three different times, all of them for about a week. And in some ways, it feels like it just happened. You know, it's just it's hard to get a gauge on the timing of it.
That's fair, because it you dive in and it's nonstop. I mean, when you're here full time too, it just they throw the switch, and you know you get very few breathers. I mean, the Tuesdays, the dark Tuesday, quote unquote, is a day to kind of catch up and reset and dry cleaning, laundry, whatever, and grocery shopping, whatever it might be. It is a funny schedule when you're really involved. And you talk about that back gate and off of Fifth Avenue, and I think about the annex, which of course is the handful of barns that are right across that side of Fifth from the Oklahoma, and that corner where what amounts to the far turn or what would be a clubhouse turn, really the end of the clubhouse turn, the start of the backstretch, there's a patch of grass, there's a corner, and this came up the other day. That's that little corner of grass is where Tom Voss used to watch everything from there, including his own horses.
I remember that very well. I remember going. Tom Voss always had, when you go in that back, which is literally right across the street from where I stay, from Ivy and Rhoda's house. And if you go in, there are two entrances there. If you go in the entrance on the left, the first barn on the left is where he had John's Call. I remember going to visit John's Call. And what was great this year is that if you go in the second entrance again, which is like right at, 50 yards from the house, is where Kenny McPeak is stabled. So we were able to just walk across the street anytime we want to just go visit Eskimo Kisses, which was great. She was right in front of the house practically. So. But I remember, the thing is, like I said, even now, Elizabeth Voss, occasionally, she comes out, but I remember Tom. He was a, very imposing figure. He'd always be hanging out there. Jonathan Shepard's there now quite a bit, too, now.
Well, and Voss would be standing there and smoking cigarette after cigarette, and... Mm-hmm. And kind of holding court.
That was
very much.
That was always the jumping set.
Yep.
I remember years ago. I forgot. I don't know if it was Tom Voss or Jonathan Shepard. It was one of the steeplechase trainers, and he had a little Shetland pony that he had taught how to jump, and he put up these little miniature hurdles for him. And I actually did. A feature. I don't know if I did it or Joan did it for Naira when she was. I think Joan might have written it when she was a public relations coordinator for Naira. And I took the pictures of this little Shetland pony jumping over these little mini hurdles that are like 5 inches from the ground. But that was I mean, it was always a nice place to visit. And then for years, you remember, Virginia Kraft Payson owned the whole property on the right-hand side and in the back with the big house there. And, that's where Jim Bond's horses, Barons, and all of Jim Bond's big horses back in those days would be saddled back in there. So that annex has a little history all of its own. It's just, it's literally right across the street from the back entrance to Oklahoma. But now, what do you call it? The lot has so many horses there now. Chad Brown. In fact, that's the only Chad Brown horses you see on Oklahoma. Chad and Todd Fletcher. You never see their main, their main string. They go to the main track every morning. I understand Fletcher worked a lot of horses on Oklahoma this meet. But, just standing out there, the times I was there, I don't know if I saw any. The only Fletcher horses I remember seeing are the ones that came and worked on the grass when they had the grass training, when the grass course was open. But the only Chad, like I said, the only one of Chad Brown's horses you see are the ones that that were in the annex.
Well, he's got those two barns that are off to the on the parallel track with the track kitchen, but it's just as easy to go across the street. It's like equidistant
to the
training track or to the main.
It's closer, yeah. I think it's closer to the.
It might be.
I think his barn
yeah.
in Oklahoma is closer to the main track than it is to the Oklahoma training track. Well, it's pretty close. He's practically right at Union Avenue.
Exactly, and they go right across to the street there, and of course the for there are people that know to avoid Union for that reason.
Oh, yes.
during certain hours from 5 a.m. to about 9:30 you stay
yes.
away. You better come down East Avenue if you want to get to the track or go around the backside to Lincoln. And you know, it's funny. I would never have thought that it would be a topic, but it is. Those far-flung and sort of the nook and cranny barns, there's the ones over by the horseshoe, too, that are basically between, and I'm going to forget the name of that street, if you come out the back gate where the Capital OTB
yeah, right.
by Clare Court. And
right. Well, Linda Rice has all the horses there, and Chad Brown and Bill Mott have horses back in there, too.
Well, but you go the further you go, like three blocks down, and there's those little tiny, there's like, maybe five barns that are literally in the neighborhood that are you know, people may, you know, be living literally mm-hmm. next door to a, you know, to a shed row.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. Well, that's one of the great things about eating breakfast is this horseshoe. You know, you see the horses walk by,
yeah,
right on the street, going from those barns. I remember going all the way back to 1985. If you right by the barns you're talking about, where Linda Rice's barn is, and there's a little walking ring as you go in, and that's I remember seeing Mom's Command was stabled in there when she won the Alabama and the test. There's been a lot of good horses back there. But yeah, you can make a right-hand turn on that street right opposite and go
exactly.
past the horseshoe. Or you can
it's
go
Gridley.
Down
right. My man Joe Vellante. Joe, pretty impressive. Joe comes up with Gridley on the block. I love it. Good job, Joe.
Yeah. Well, that's why, like I said, if you go down further, Linda Rice's barns are down there. And, you know, she's got a ton of horses there. It's like a whole different world. It's like there are four separate worlds. You know, you got the main backstretch, and of course, Clare Court, and then down further, and then where everybody hangs out at the little breakfast stand there, and then you got the area across Nelson Avenue that we were just talking about, and then you got Oklahoma, and then you have the annex across Fifth Avenue. So it's actually four different barn areas.
I can remember, I'll give you a funny one, that my friend Malcolm, my late friend Malcolm Soonis, had a horse that he trained, Junior, and he was over at the harness track one summer.
There are horses there, too.
And Rick Violette.
Oh, I remember these horses there, right.
Violette had horses there, and
right,
of all the horses that was absolutely right opposite of Junior was Man from Wicklow. And who I got to play with, and I even may have held a few times or walked Man from Wicklow, and I kind of treasured that. That was pretty cool, and it's kind of funny over at the harness track. It's much more subdued. Some people think it's a negative to be sent there, but it's not at all, and it in some cases it's kind of lower key for the horses, and the horses. You know, the horses can appreciate that in a lot of cases. Man from Wicklow, who was a nice horse. When people talk about Violette's good horses, you don't hear his name too often.
No. Well, the thing is, I remember for years, you would see Violet's horses, you know, walking down the street from there, you know, and going across Nelson Avenue. He was stabled back in there for a long time.
Gosh, that's got to be close to 20 years ago.
That's what's great about it. You look at the barns and you remember who used to be there. Right behind where you do your Capital OTB show, that first barn where all the trees are. You know, for years and years, that was Calumet. But John Veach and all his cats with it. You know, you'd go there and the barn was filled. There's like 20 kittens there running around. But, you know, the days of Aladar and Devona Dale and, you know, those great Calumet horses, they were always in the first barn. If you went a couple of barns farther down, Alan Jerkins was there for years, and Carl Nasker was on that row, you know, that down in Clare Court on the other, on the near side, the Nelson Avenue side of the pony track. You get all those trainers there. And then Alan moved across the pony track to the other side, you know, right, he had the barn way in the back, right by they used to call it Green Tree, now it's the Godolphin stable area, this, you know, private stable area. But this year was fun because, you know, in that area, Jonathan Thomas is stable there now. You know, it was nice going to visit Catholic Boy several times. And then Violet now is right behind that little breakfast stand, where coffee stand, where everybody hangs around, and little picnic tables there, and that's where a lot of the trainers and agents and everybody hangs around there watching the training. But if you go to the main track backstretch and you go to Oklahoma, it's two totally different worlds. There's a totally different atmosphere. You feel like your world's apart. So it's got a little something for everything, depending on what you're looking for. Do you want the seclusion? You know, like you said, you got the harness track and a lot of areas of Oklahoma are secluded, like we're back with Nick Zito and Wayne Lucas are there way in the far corner where there's nothing but fields and ravines behind them. And where Lucas is now is where his mentor, John Nerud, used to be way in the back. And Zito now, he's got all his horses there. He never goes to Belmont anymore. He's way in the back. He's got a great, great spot all the way in the back. So it's just great going and looking at all the barns. And, of course, the main one that it's still difficult to walk by, but you have to walk by it every time you walk along the clubhouse turn in Oklahoma, is passing Bob Frankel's barn. And, you know, I can still envision the bench out in front. Jim Ryerson has the barn now, but the bench out there, and Bobby would be sitting on the bench with his Australian Shepherd, you know, Happy, that he absolutely loved more than anything. And then when she died, he had Ginger. But, you know, Bobby just hanging around there in that array, that all-star cast of horses he always had. But, you know, just and he would always, everybody would stop by that. Yeah, every agent, you know, the golf carts would be stopping by there every 2 seconds. Everybody would be coming to talk, and you know, just it was basically Brooklyn talk. You know, it's a bunch of guys hanging out on the corner, you know, talking racing. So it was always a great spot. So it's really a feeling of emptiness now when you walk by that spot. You know, really miss him a lot.
You hit on, you might as well take the lead on a couple of points here, and Yoshida follows up the Jonathan Thomas Travers with Catholic Boy, and here's another turf horse, Steve, that takes a big prize when it comes to the Woodward and propels himself toward a Breeders' Cup Classic date, and this is just as intriguing a storyline as the Catholic Boy Travers success.
Well, the thing is, Bill Mott's been wanting to try him on dirt for a long time. In fact, he was torn going into the Whitney whether to run Yoshida for the first time or stick with Good Samaritan, who he had done the same thing with last year, who was strictly a turf horse, and he put him on the dirt for the first time in the Jim Dandy, and the horse romped. And, you know, he wound up winning the World in his handicap and placing in some races. But, you know, he had run a couple of disappointing races. But he decided to go with Good Samaritan in the Whitney. But he was very seriously considering running Yoshida first time because he just loved the way he worked. You know, a lot of people are going to say, well, you know, the Woodward field wasn't much. And, he, you know, when I spoke to Bill the morning after the race, you know, and Bill's always the realist. And, the first thing he said, well, let's see what happens when he meets better horses. You know, which is true. Obviously, he's got to meet horses like Diversify. And if he's pointing for the Classic, he still has to, you know, meet all the top horses out in California. But, you know, if you look at the Woodward, even though it didn't have a big-name field, you know, at 14 horses in there, they came out of the woodwork to run in it because there was absolutely no standout. I mean, the favorite was, you know, was practically 7-2 in the race with Gunavera. You know, when Gunavera is the lukewarm favorite, you know, it's not the strongest race in the world because he's in the midst of making a comeback right now. But if you look at the race the way it turned out, it turned out to be a very classy race. I mean, first of all, you know, to go 148-4, that's legitimate time. But what's more important is that Yoshida came home his last three eights in 36 flat. So he went 23-4 and then 12-1 for the final eighth. So I thought he ran a tremendous race. I mean, he just looked like he was loving it. You know, and he was giving weight to a lot of these horses as well. And then Gunavera, who, like I said, was, you know, was a lukewarm favorite. He was like 5 wide the entire way and then wound up like 10 wide at the quarter pole, lost a ton of ground. And he closed well enough to finish second. So this race might not have been as bad as people think. There's a lot of things to like about it. And if you want to say, well, you know, this race wasn't as strong as the Whitney because Diversify, obviously Diversify is the leading horse in the East, and it was run on a much faster track because it's obviously the time was faster. But I mean, the horse that finished third in the Whitney, Discreet Lover, finished 12th in the Woodward. So I'm not going to downplay the Woodward at all. I mean, I think it could turn out to be a really good race. And Yoshida ran like he didn't run like a grass horse who just happened to be going on the dirt for the first time. He ran like a dirt horse. And you know, if you look at the horse's pedigree, there's still plenty of dirt in there. A lot of people are not going to be familiar with his pedigree, but he's. He's a good horse, no matter what he runs in. He ran a hell of a race at Royal Ascot. You know, he's a grade one winner on dirt and turf. And like you said, he's like the older version of Catholic Boy. And I think it might be the beginning of a trend that we're going to see. I think a lot of trainers now. Look how many trainers who have really good two-year-olds. Not just dirt two-year-olds, just really good two-year-olds. They don't want to run them at 5.5 furlongs. So, you know, they want to run them longer. So they'll run them first time out on grass. You know, we saw what happened in the Spittaway, where, you know, she was a grass filly first time out. The race gets taken off the grass second time out, and she wins by 17. And now she's a grade one winner on dirt. So I think we're going to see a lot of that. You see a lot of horses starting their career off on the grass, not because the trainer feels they're grass horses, but because it's a good place to start a young horse.
Agreed. In fact, we started on Sunday with our looking at Lucky Colt, and he actually ran very well, and we'll probably, you know, for now, probably let him continue to, you know, to ply the trade on the grass. I know exactly the kind of thinking, you know, that you're alluding to. I mean, he'll have plenty of opportunity for dirt during the winter, but for fitness and as he develops, and you know, why not? It's funny how many of those races this because of the kind of summer we had with the as many races that came off the turf. In fact, it'd be interesting to to pull those numbers up. I've been printing out and organizing all the results the last couple of days. How many of those races and tracking the horses that had been meant for turf races. And sometimes you don't know either. Sometimes trainers, they enter, and especially when we knew there were days on end that we were going to get wet weather, and I'm sure plenty of outfits said, well, this very well may come off. If it stays on the grass, okay, we'll run. But if it comes off, all the better. So you don't know how many horses, you know, were in the back of the minds. They were thinking that way.
Right. Yeah. Plus, we're also starting to produce now is a new brand of stallion. You know, it used to be where you go to the sales, everybody wants a dirt stallion. They don't. You know, grass horses. Nobody ever paid big money for grass horses. But I think things have changed now. You know, because you've got stallions like More Than Ready, who you know was a dirt horse, but made his reputation on the grass. And now is making his reputation on the dirt. And I think a lot of breeders now are going to be looking for stallions that can produce both dirt and grass horses. So I think horses like Catholic Boy and Yoshida and horses like that who excel, who can win grade one stakes, grade two stakes on grass and dirt, I think they're going to be more in demand as stallions because I think it gives the breeders so many more options and so many more different kinds of mares you can breed for these stallions. You know, like when Scat Daddy, who was strictly a dirt horse, you know, made an early reputation on the grass and then wound up becoming the tremendous dirt stallion. These things all run in cycles and you never know. I've seen it so many times where you just don't know how long it's going to take for a stallion to find its niche. And I think everybody's going to be looking for the next More Than Ready, those kind of stallions. If they can run on grass, all the better. So I think you're going to find, and they know that they're not going to go for the pure grass stallion. So I think you're going to find a lot more grass horses now trying the dirt just as an experiment. If it doesn't work, no big deal. You just go back to the grass again. But let's say, take an example. Let's say a horse like Point of Entry, who was like one of the best grass horses we've seen in years. Now, I mean, there's no tremendous demand for him, but let's just picture if Shug McGahee had run him after him winning all those major, major grass stakes. Let's say Shug McGahee had run him in the Jockey Club Gold Cup or the Breeders' Cup Classic and had found out that he became an equally efficient dirt horse. All of a sudden you've got a popular, much more popular stallion on your hand, and there are a lot of horses like that.
Shift to the two-year-old, Steve, in fact, because in addition and the Sipican Harbor story was fun to talk with Gary Contessa the other day, and that, you know, that was a legitimate follow-up to the maiden win, the off-the-turf maiden win. You know, a lot of people wondered, well, you know, wins by 17, who knows what, you know, what was behind. But this was a group. I mean, this was a real group. And the same thing can be, you might as well, we'll do Saratoga and then go to Del Mar. The Saratoga races, both upset, quote-unquote, but both horses, when it came to Sacco on with Mind Control on Monday, these were real efforts. These are quality two-year-olds.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I thought, you know, Mind Control, the thing about Mind Control is that, you know, at 10 to 1, I mean, he definitely was a play here. First of all, he had the second highest buyer figure of any horse in the race other than Mucho, who looked like he, you know, was got something special going in there. And, you know, I don't care if it was Mammoth. I don't care how fast the track is. When a two-year-old breaks his maiden second time out in 109.3, and a horse by Stay Thirsty, he goes 6 furlongs in 109.3, you've got something pretty special there. And, yeah, I thought Velasquez gave him a great ride, you know, from the inside. He found his spot. And you got to be happy for somebody like Greg Sacco, whose his whole family has been involved in training horses, and he's been a fixture at in New Jersey for so many years. And to see him come up to Saratoga and have the first of the whole family to win a Grade One stake was very special. I thought it was great. And the horse, listen, the Mind Control is bred to go farther. He's got some good stamina in his female family. A lot of people aren't going to be too familiar with his broodmare sire. Lightning and Thunder, but Lightning and Thunder is by Stormcat out of a stalwart mare, and stalwart's all distance, son of Hoist the Flag. And if you look at the whole female family, filled with stamina. Private Account down in there, and I always love seeing French Deputy in a pedigree as well. I always know my old buddy used to breed tremendous horses for years, Rob Whiteley. He swore by French Deputy. Always look for French Deputy in the female family, because French Deputy produces really good, solid milers, and they go with any. If you can find anything with with stamina on top, like a Stay Thirsty, who's a son of Bernardini, when you can find that kind of stamina on top to go with French Deputy, they click. And Rob Whiteley, who bred Liberation Farm, and he bred all those Carl Icahn horses for years. He swore by French Deputy, and he produced a lot of good horses. But Source has actually got a very strong pedigree, top and bottom. So I don't expect him to have any distance limitations at all. And listen, Mucho, obviously, whenever a huge favorite, even money favorite, gets beat, it's disappointing, but he ran fine. He stalked, tracked the pace the whole way. He was beaten three quarters of a length, and he's another horse who's going to get a lot, much better when he goes farther. He's bred strictly for distance. He's the son of Blame, and I thought he ran excellent. When they stretch out to two turns, he'll be there at the Breeders' Cup. Let's put it that way. He'll be one of the favorites in the Breeders' Cup. Getting beaten these races, that's fine. I know when you get that like that, you want to obviously you want to win the race. But looking ahead, I think he got beat by a really good horse. He finished several lengths clear of the third horse, who was a very fast horse. That Nitrous, who was a very fast horse, was very impressive breaking his maiden. And Sombaye was already a graded stakes winner at the meet. So he beat. He beat a pretty good field, I thought. So, and you have to, and another thing too, by the way, about both Mind Control and Mucho, is that if you look at some of the other highly regarded horses in here, like Nitrous and the Maryland Shipper, that would be Grand, who was impressive breaking his maiden, and Marcassi's horse Dreammaker, who was impressive breaking his maiden. But those three horses, they're coming with 5.5 furlong races. And I've always been a firm believer that there's a big difference between going from 5.5 to 7 and 6 to 7. And Mind Control and Mucho were both, had a 6 furlong race under their belt. And even though it's only 0.5 furlong, when you're that lightly raced now and you're stretching out that extra 0.5 furlong, it could mean the difference between, winning or finishing second or third. And as it turns out, the two horses with the 2 6-furlong races under them finished 1-2.
Turn to the filly race, Steve, before we talk about what happened in California. And chasing yesterday, I was really, and even Baffert very directly on Tuesday said he was disappointed and surprised, actually. I think that when you ship a horse like this, a sister to American Pharoah, you ship them to Saratoga, you have confidence that they're going to run. And she, right from really from early on, you wondered, maybe she needs to be ridden along a little here and get close and be within. At no point did she look like she was going to impact that race.
No, I totally agree. I think coming out of the gate, she did not look good at all. First of all, she was too far back. Supposedly, she lost a shoe in the race, but that's, you know, she still wasn't going to win if she hadn't lost a shoe. And, you know, it was just a disappointing race. I was surprised to see Baffert. I thought she'd be a natural for the debutante, but you know, Baffert obviously had another horse in there who actually wound up getting beat. But I was surprised he shipped her cross country. You know, normally he doesn't ship his 2 year olds. He usually saves them for Del Mar. But I don't know. I mean, she just. I still think she's a nice filly. I think you'll definitely hear from her. But you have to remember, she was coming off of one start. You know, and I can't hold it against these horses who would just have one start. You don't know what you have. When they face winners for the first time, it's a big test. And when they face winners for the first time in a Grade 1 stake, it's a very, very big test. And there were some nice horses in this race. I mean, the first four finishes won their last start.
No, Sipican, obviously, I mean, we talked.
You know, Sipican Harbor is an excellent filly. And Kenny McPeak's filly, ran well. I don't think they were crazy about the ride she got, but she ran well. She ran well enough. She finished second. So, you know, she was second choice in the race, coming off the stakes win at Churchill Downs. And I thought, if you look at Sipican Harbor and Cassie's Dream, the third place finisher at 68-1, at one point or another in the race, both those fillies were dead last. Cassie's Dream was last after the opening quarter, and Sipican Harbor was last at the half.
The Cassie's Dreamer story is fun. The $50,000 claim, and then get turned around and get a placement in the Grade 1. On the disappointment front, let's fold in Del Mar. And Baffert said as well with Roadster. And he cited that second start concern and the potential for regression in that second start. But yet, here's Baffert in position to win a 14th Futurity, Steve, with a horse that he felt and from a pedigree standpoint and even a physical standpoint looks like a horse that really is a legitimate two-turn type, and yet here he is 2-for-2 and game winner Gary and Mary West. They've got what looks to be that maybe the follow up to New Year's Day, a big disappointment for them that he couldn't make it to 3, maybe this is the one that is sort of the missing piece between West Coast and New Year's Day.
Well, first of all, it's very rare to see Mike Smith be on the wrong Baffert horse, and you don't usually see that.
That's true.
But the thing with Game Winner is that. The one thing I noticed, and Baffert has done this before now, he's started to do this, where he'll send a horse first time out with blinkers on, and they'll win very, very impressively. And even though they won impressively, he'll take the blinkers off in the second start, which is what he did with Game Winner. And it's interesting, looking at it, it looks as if that, you know, he's got a Son of Candy ride, and first time out, you want that horse to, you know, you want that horse to break their maiden first time out. You want to get that over with. So what do? You try and put speed into them. So you put blinkers on, get as much speed as you can out of them, and then after they win like that, then you want to take some of that speed away, because especially your Son of Candy ride, you don't want him to get used to, you know, being fast and being, you know, right on the pace and just running fast fractions and having those, you know, the blinkers, you know, enhance your speed. So he takes the blinkers off, and the horse wins impressively. I think it's a brilliant move. You don't usually see that. You don't usually see horses with equipment changes after a big win. But if you notice in this race, unlike the last race when he was battling head and head the whole way, here he's laying 5 lengths off the pace, and he's still 2.5 lengths off at the stretch. Anyone going away. So, you know, there's absolutely no reason, especially with this horse's pedigree, why he's not going to go on. And, you know, I'm sure Roadster's going to turn out to be a really good horse anyway. But like you said, it was only his second start as well. And he wound up, you know, tracking that, Roatan, who was obviously a very fast horse, who opened up big early in the race. And Roadster was, running second to him, which is probably not where you want to be when a horse is opening up like that. So he was, he did all the chasing, and ran okay. Got beat two lengths. No big deal. He'll turn out to be a good horse. Obviously the big horse out there is still at Instagram, Jerry Hollendorfer's horse. But Roadster's by quality rode out of a Silver Ghost in there, so he's going to he'll get better as the distances go on. But not only did Baffert run 1-3 here, but I think he won like every maiden special weight race as well.
Yeah, it was a parade of maiden
everything
winners.
Everything he sends out. I mean, besides this, he sends out a first time starter, this Pioneer of the Nile Code, this much better, who is very impressive. It looked to me like on Saturday, as opposed to Monday, the track looked very slow on Saturday. The times were incredibly slow, and they crawled home in these races, including in the debutante. But obviously the track got faster on Monday. But I mean, Baffert saddled this horse, and then he had another first time starter at Magic on Tap. He's got tremendous breeding, like Tapping out of a street sense mare, and that horse looked impressive as well. So, I mean, he just keeps coming up with them. This is like an assembly line, these two-year-olds. You got a bunch of them in stakes, and you got a bunch of them coming out first-time starters. They come out running, every one of them.
Now, the debutante side of things, of course, the disappointment for Larry Best and Hollendorfer with Brill, who really very similar, didn't fire, and a lot of build up for that opportunity. So they'll have to regroup and look toward.
I don't know. I don't know if you like being between horses. You never know again. They get into different types of competition. But listen, the fillies that the filly that won obviously is a very nice filly, and Bob Baffert actually lost the race. I mean, he actually finished second in this race. With a filly looks like mother looks like she's going to be a decent filly.
Yeah, the winner and we actually misconnected this week, not getting a chance to talk to Simon Callahan this week, but the winner here, this Bellafina, and Callahan overall, obviously is strong when it comes to, for those that have forgotten, he did start Abel Tasman.
The strangest story. How he lost that filly, you'll never see again. That whole Silks mix-up, where it wasn't his fault at all. I mean, he tried to get the Silks. Silks didn't show up. And he had no choice. He had to run her. He had to run her in the other part in the Silks. And obviously, China Horse Club wasn't too happy about that, and took the horse away. But I mean, that's a strange event.
He does a good job, and with young horses, particularly, this is now another one that he'll keep tabs.
People forget the job he did. One work that people completely have forgotten about is Firing Line, who came very close to beating American Pharoah in the Kentucky Derby, who ran his heart out in that race. Never even changed leads in the stretch and was beaten a length and made American Pharoah run the hardest race by far of his life. And so he had just an absolute disaster in the Preakness, and that was it for him. But he was on his he would have been a major, major star. And Simon Callahan did a tremendous job with him.
Well, his babies turned two in January. Well, next year we'll see we'll see firing lines. He's at Crestwood.
Yeah, I like that. I remember before the Derby, Gary Stevens absolutely loved him. I haven't heard Gary Stevens praise a horse like he praised Firing Line going into the Derby. He was so confident going into that race. You know, and he ran a great race.
He did, and then I've never seen a horse look so miserable on a racetrack as he did in that rainstorm at Pimlico.
God, I felt so badly for him.
He was miserable with his chin tucked in, his head turned from the rain hitting him. That's before the gates open. And walking to the going to the gate, he was absolutely giving all the body language of a horse saying, "I really don't want to do this." That was too bad. Well, we got the making, Steve. We've got the more rounds of 2 year olds, including Keeneland yet, and the next round at Belmont and Santa Anita, and they'll come from some other points on the compass. But this was certainly a great way to for the 2 year old programs at both Saratoga and Del Mar to wrap up, and we got some nice ones to look forward to toward the fall.
We got the champagne. Listen, you're gonna see a lot. The one thing that Chad Brown, what he does now, by the way, is that when he has an impressive winner at Saratoga, a lot of times he'll skip or at Belmont Park, he'll skip the hopeful and go straight to the champagne. And he did it last year with Good Magic, and he's doing it this year. He's got several 2 year olds that can run. So the champagne will be interesting. We'll see who shows up from the from this group.
No, he's got no shortage. And didn't he do the same thing with Practical Joke?
Yes, ran it right, exactly. Did the same thing with Practical Joke.
So
yeah, and and it was a tremendous race. He beat out that Syndergaard.
So he won, and actually, Practical Joke, I think, actually won both. He did win he won the hopeful, and then came back and won the champagne.
Yeah,
he actually got both in because he had started.
Yeah, he's a good horse. If I tell you one thing, buddy, watch his first. Breeders love, buyers at the sales. They love these first crop stallions. Watch how they latch on to Practical Joke. First time, watch his yearlings the first time they hit the sales ring. I think he's going to be a very popular stallion.
Well, and being by Into Mischief, that doesn't hurt either. That's certainly going to that'll certainly pitch in. Now, Steve, before we wrap, we got to revisit. We talked last week right on the heels of the NTWO piece by Victoria Keith, and we should revisit here a week later with a lot more knowledge or seemingly more knowledge, not a complete picture, but I know we can't break off here without revisiting where things stand for you and your thoughts and what has transpired this past week.
Well, there isn't much I can say about it or really want to say about it. If people want to believe that I would support nefarious activities, that's up to them. I can't control what people think, especially those who would rather think the worst of someone. I've never gotten involved with Dina's Horse Rescue. We never discussed it on our radio show, which obviously I have discontinued. I'm not knowledgeable enough on all this to cast judgment on anyone. I just know Dina as a person. And, sure, I wish she had open communications with the NTWO and Maggie Moss, and they all could have come up with some kind of compromise on how to go about saving horses. It's just a shame the way everything turned out. And the perception of my involvement was exacerbated by someone who I think very little of. He knows who he is and what he is. The people who know me are the only people I'm interested in. I'm just disillusioned, mainly with those who resort to hate tactics. It's just not normal. Look, I mean, I couldn't believe the hate and hostilities that spewed back and forth between Zaniato fans and Rachel Alexandra fans, but you know, that's what our society has become with social media. You know, in the future, I'm going to focus my writing on, you know, on the beauty and the history of the sport, as I've always done for 50 years, even if only a handful of people read it, and that's what I enjoy doing. The horses are all that's important to me, and to tell you the truth, it pains me and sickens me to see what's become of many of them. You know, and I'm appalled at the greed and the uncaring nature of so many people who own them. They're the ones that need to be targeted and driven out of the sport. So, you know, people can believe what they want. I mean, I have no control over that. Not much else I can say. Just time to get back to horse racing.
All right. Well, will you come back to Twitter, or are you?
I was looking for a while to get to get off of Twitter. I mean, at some point I might activate it, but you know, right now I have to get over my disillusionment. Let's put it that way. And actually, I find myself not really missing it at all. But you know, anything's possible. You know, things start dying down. It's possible I could get back. I enjoy Twitter for the news aspect of it, not for everything else. You know, you can have a lot of fun with Twitter if you engage in. Listen, any kind of normal disagreements, you can have fun with it. People disagree all the time, but it just brings out a certain breed of people sometimes. And I know a lot of people that, you know, listen, a lot of well-known people in racing have had to get off of Twitter. But you know, I might wind up coming back at some point, but right now I really don't miss it at all.
No, I don't know where the circumstances will, you know, will go from here, but it does from every angle. It just makes it so hard for, you know, for the sport. Some people, and this is not the first time that there's been the kinds of difficulties that can arise when, you know, when horses are in, you know, in a perilous place. I mean, I've rescued, pitched in to rescue a horse. There's some very bad people out there, and they take advantage of, you know, the generous nature of, you know, of those that love the animal. And
exactly, that's part of my disillusionment too. Is that the you know, there are so many people that own horses that should not be owning horses, and then when greed sets in, it just sets everything back. And you know, people are so much more aware now of horse slaughter, and you know, it just it hits a nerve. I certainly understand that. But you know, listen, I've written columns about it in the past. You know, I wrote the first story about the NTWO when they were formed. I thought that was one of the best things we've ever seen to try and stem the tide of this this onslaught of horse slaughter. But you know, listen, it is a lot better than it used to be. You know, it is outlawed in places that never used to be. We just have to concentrate on the ones that still have it, and just like what the NTWO are doing too, is just try and nip it in the bud. Just protect these horses before they get there.
Well, that's it. I mean, putting the horses, and you and I, back when you actually wrote the initial piece, you and I discussed this, and there's been progress. There was certainly progress when I went back and I referred back to the policies that were put in place at a lot of particularly northeastern tracks, and the situation that it clearly Louisiana that more or less
the hornet's nest
was the hotbed for this. I mean the fact that these horses are even placed in, you know, in a perilous position, that's
they show up there a week after running.
There's a lot of information that is comes in bits and pieces, and blocking that pipeline is would solve, like it did in the Northeast. To be honest, I mean we don't have it as often. You know, there are horses that'll turn up, but it not like when this started. And when you and I discussed it back in the winter, I referenced, I remember having the conversations with Glennie Kane Oakford, who was tracking, you know, policies that were being put in place by NYRA and Finger Lakes and Suffolk at the time. And
Suffolk,
you know,
is the one that started it all, remember?
Yeah, and put
Suffolk
a stop to...
Any horse that was caught in the kill pen, and they would trace that horse. Any horse that was caught,
right,
that was in a kill pen, that traced to an owner that raced the horse at Suffolk Downs, that owner was barred from ever racing
that's
horses
right.
again at Suffolk Downs.
That
would spread, you know.
Well, it did. It did spread.
I was hoping it would spread even further.
Well, the
especially Louisiana.
Well, this is always a difficult conversation, and it's created just an ugliness that we hope
it is. And the thing is, you have so many people with good intentions, and but that's the whole thing. Like so many things in racing, everything is splintered. You know, people going off in one direction and doing things one way, and other people going off in other directions and doing things another way, when all these people should be united in this common cause and come up with a compromise and put it all under the umbrella of the TAA or the NTWO, because every person who wants to save horses needs as much support as they can get. So, you know, you can't turn all these people and organizations against each other. They have to be able to compromise and understand the other person's point of view.
Well, the one element of that has to be uniform is that the horse is the only thing that matters, and
of course,
the personalities involved. And in some cases, you know, the focus on you know, trying to put it on, making, you know, people turning the spotlight on themselves to try for that, you know, there were people for decades that have worked without any notoriety, saving horses out of the kill pen that no one knew. Spotters that worked anonymously. I discussed this with you back then, and no one they weren't looking for any attention. They weren't looking, you know, for pats on the back. They were doing it for all the right reasons, and,
sure.
and that now
listen, I,
that's the
listen, I go
that's
back,
the most
I go
important.
Back to 1991. I did the first feature ever on the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. I went to Wallkill Prison, where they would, you know, all these rescue horses would be sent to the prison, and the inmates would be taught how to take care of horses.
Sure.
There's so many different aspects of it, but that's the whole thing. Is that you have a lot of individuals, but these individuals would be better off if they were under a single umbrella, and
everybody would be working
together instead of separately.
Yep, and that's what that's the intention. The NTWO's mission. Well, Steve, I wanted to ask you your further thoughts here a week later. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, like I said, it is what it is. I can't control the way people think, so they can take what they want. Nothing I can do about it. I'm just going to, you know, like I said, to me, the horse takes priority over everything else. And, saving these horses should be a major goal, but it should be under a common umbrella and a common cause. I think we can do it if everybody worked together.
Steve Askin. Talk next week. I appreciate it.
Okay, Steve. Take care.
Steve Askin. Rich Eng, I apologize. We'll get, you know, do some, maybe some Rich Eng tomorrow for weekend preview. And weekend preview will include the start of the fall championship meet tomorrow, Belmont. They'll run at Los Al today. First post, 4 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Pacific. Kentucky Downs, 225, first post. Maiden 75s. Thanks to Jenny Reese. That was fun with Jenny earlier. And Tony Black and Steve. Back with you tomorrow, 9 a.m. for weekend preview at the races. Good luck today, everybody. Thanks a lot.
Black sheep with the angels riding down the line. We think there is a soul.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
38-4643. With 34. 25 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.